We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the NBA Front Office Show, May 1st. It's going to be May. It's here. We got a whole new month. We've got some teams desperately clinging to their playoff lives. Looked like the 76ers were done, and then they sat up like the Undertaker. We'll talk a bit about that. We'll talk about Mike Conley wins an award. Zach LaVine ahead of schedule. What does that mean for the Chicago Bulls? A lot of stuff to get into. We'll also give an update on Kawhi Leonard, Jaime Jaquez, Kristaps Porzingis, all kinds of stuff going on around the NBA. Make sure you do subscribe to the NBA Front Office Show on YouTube. Don't forget to also follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Trevor Lane, joined by Keith Smith. Keith, the May is here, and it's brought the heat with it. I am currently melting, but somehow we'll get through this show while I try to figure out the solution to my air conditioning issue in the studio.
Oh man, yeah, that's brutal. And not like we're under like super duper bright lights, but we both have lights like staring us in the face as well, so that you can see how handsome we both are, or at least you. I'm trying to smile less on the show because apparently I was very smug yesterday because the Lakers lost and the Celtics are still playing. That at least that's what a handful of the viewers said. So I'll try to be less happy about talking basketball with my friend.
It is 2024. You know, on a societal level, we look for things to be offended by. That's the way we are as a people now. And so I don't think you need to refrain from smiling or anything like that. I'm not worried about your, as Michael Scott would say, the smudgeness. I think you're just fine. Perfect. On that one. I am not worried. Keith, you and I know, like, people ask, how does this work? How do you have a Lakers fan and a Celtics fan on the same show? How is this possible? And I would say, because you are, and I don't mean to get all mushy, you're one of my favorite people in the world. And if the Celtics lose, I am simultaneously happy that the Celtics lost and sad for you. And I knew as soon as the Lakers lost, you were one of the first people to text me, sorry, buddy. Yeah, I know you feel the same way. I want good things for you. I want bad things for the Celtics. Those don't go hand in hand, but somehow we've made peace with it.
Well, I think we also realize, too, we are grown individuals who maybe now get over things a little easier than we used to. I think one of the things I texted you was better day tomorrow, right? Yeah. Like that's what you hope for, right? Is a better day tomorrow. But yeah, it was just very funny. It also comes with the territory. I know you're just like me with this. Mm-hmm. We can get 100 nice comments and one negative one. And the 100 nice ones, as much as we appreciate them, the one person who said something not nice, it like just digs at you. So it's, you know, it is what it is. But no, seriously, at the end of the day, you watched. So thanks. Like that's,
so we'll take,
you know,
it.
I'm happy. It's like now that they've monetized Twitter, it's like, okay, if you want to engage with me to call me stupid, that's fine. You engaged in the tweet. That's just more money coming into my bank account. So let's go. Like I'm not going to purposely tweet rage bait, but that's how people take it. You know, so be it. I'm all for it. Let's do it. But yeah, man, it was a fun night of hoops last night. Two great games and then one game that didn't really live up to it. So where do you want to start?
Let's start with the 76ers. You know, Keith, it was like the 76ers were like John McClane on that rooftop. And it looked like, the helicopter's flying overhead. The terrorists are closing in. It looks like it's the end for them. And then suddenly they tie the fire hose around their waist. They hurl themselves off the side of the building. And next thing you know, their feet are cut up. They're beaten. They're bloodied. But they're still there. It looked like the Knicks. By the way, I'm not calling the Knicks terrorists. I should walk that back real quick here.
That's fine.
They are by far. I have spent enough time praising the Knicks to know that in no way do I see the Knicks as the villain of this story. But
that's who you're like. I feel like at this point, that's who you're pretty openly rooting for.
Oh, yeah.
The rest of the way, right? Yeah.
I am all in. I am all in on the Knicks. I just love watching them play. It's not always pretty, but I know they're going to be flying all over the court doing everything they can to win the game. I still don't know how they lost that game last night. That was, I mean, you've got a 4-point play for Tyrese Maxey followed by an almost a logo three to tie the game. It was a quick 7-1 run in the final, 30 seconds or whatever of that game. And the 76ers stave off elimination. It was the kind of stuff out of an action movie, seeing them escape from what looked to be certain death. I've said enough about that. What did you think about that game?
Let me get off this analogy before we go further. I thought it was a great game. I say this every year in the playoffs, especially basketball is the best, especially when you have no real rooting interest, meaning you're not going to be crushed one way or another with the result. And you could just enjoy it. That's when it's absolutely the best, game in the world, in my opinion. And that game had everything. I want to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Are you team foul up three when you have the lead?
Yeah, I am. I am. And you know what? Because every time my team doesn't do it, I always think they should do it. You know what I mean? I'm always sure. And now if I'm a neutral, no, don't take that fun moment away from me. If it's my team though, yes, you foul up three every time. Are there going to be some times where you screw up and you give up three free throws? Sure. But I am in general, you want to win the game and you're not worried about what's the most entertaining thing. Yeah, I think you foul.
Yeah, shocking to no one. We're mostly in agreement on that. I have of the opinion of I am pro the strategy of it for the fun factor. I don't like it. I hate it. Right. I want to see potential buzzer beaters to tie games. But every time a team does it, I get it. I understand why they do it. And I'm not saying that you do it immediately. There's a time and place, right? You're not doing it if there's 30 seconds left. That's obviously not a thing there, but you are doing it when it is in a spot that it makes sense, right? Then you should be doing that's when if you get there. And there was a point where the Knicks could have fouled. They could have fouled Maxey before he got the shot off. And I know some people have said, well, he traveled anyway, that's all right. If we're gonna call traveling on everything, it wasn't a blatant travel or anything like that. But yeah, man. What a shot by him, though. He made a bunch of big plays down the stretch of that game. He is a special, special player. I had someone ask me a week ago going into the playoffs what I thought Tyrese Maxey would get paid this summer. And I said, oh, he's getting the max. The only question is going to be, does he make all NBA and qualify for the 30% max, or is he going to get it just now or the 25%? And I said, but he's 100% getting the 25% max. There's no question in my mind. I said, Philly just is their game in the system, right? They're holding on to his cap hold until they use cap space. Then they will pay him. That'll be one of the last things that officially happens in their, order of order of operations for them this summer. Yeah, he's going to get the max. There's no doubt about that.
On the fouling up three part, he shot that from so far behind the line that I could see, even if that was your strategy, you're probably thinking, I've got another dribble before I have to foul him. We're going to let him take one more. He was that was such a deep shot and obviously a massive shot for him. But are we overlooking any potential threat here of Maxey being wooed by someone else? I mean, is there any risk factor there for the 76ers?
I don't think so, because worst comes to worst, they just match it, right? He's a restricted free agent, so they'll just match. I think there are some worlds where you don't mind that if that was the way that went, because you'd get him for less, because in that situation, the other team can only offer him the 4 years and 5% raises, where Philly's going to have to give him the 5 years and 8% raises. Mm-hmm. But you're not playing those games if you're Philadelphia, because let's say they did say, do the whole, hey, we don't really want to give you the full 5 year max with 8% raises. Go out and see what you get. I don't know of a time when that has gone well for the team. It almost always comes back to bite the team at some point, where the player comes back and says, hey, remember that time when you made me go out and get a contract instead of just giving it to me? Now I'm leaving and there's nothing you can do. See you later. And no, I'm not going to help you with a sign and trade or whatever it may be. I'm out of here. So that's where I think just pay him what it takes, get it done. You've set up your entire offseason knowing that's where this was going. I hope somebody else, John, I hope Orlando jumps in there with a max offer sheet just because of the chaos it would cause. But I would imagine it'd be, instead of the team doing the old, we're hiding from you to deliver the offer sheet, it'd be like, give it to us. We can't match it quick enough. So he's not even going to sign one. My guess is we get by 6:15, Tyrese Maxey and the Philadelphia 76ers have agreed to a 5 year max contract. Then it'll be, the follow-up tweet will say the deal won't be officially signed until Philadelphia uses their cap space on whatever else they're doing. And we go from there. That's my guess is how that'll play out.
Yeah. It would be like when Thor hit Iron Man with the lightning blast, and it actually just boosted his power levels. Like, you know, I mean, there whoever signs Maxey would be thinking, oh, maybe we'll get him. And Philly would just go, no, you just made us stronger.
Right. Yeah, there it is. I thought you were going with it. Do you want me to bring the hammer down?
Oh, yeah. That's you want me to put the hammer down?
That is a fun scene. Like, that is a really fun scene. Yeah. And that it kind of like gave us a hint towards like what might come when they eventually worked up to Civil War. Because it was like, oh, the heroes are fighting each other. Like, that's at the end, as much as we like seeing them beat up on bad guys together, like, we all enjoy watching them fight each other too.
When Cap's shield ricochets off of Thor's face and it makes like the same sound as when it ricochets off of Iron Man's armor, that's when you're like, oh, it was like the slow motion bullet hitting Superman in the eye in Superman Returns or whatever it was.
I think so, yeah.
And the bullet just gets crunched. You're like, okay, they've got this dude on another level when it just bounces off of him and he doesn't even notice it. Like, that was a great scene. Great scene, great movie. And I hope that Deadpool puts the bar right back up there.
I'm hopeful. I am so hopeful. Like, let's see where we go with that. You want to go to the Bucks?
Let's go to the Bucks. So the Bucks, no Giannis, no Lillard, no chance, right? Nope. The Bucks somehow, some way, defeat the Indiana Pacers and they stay alive. And now we're getting news that Damian Lillard and Giannis might be back for game 6. Did the Pacers just blow it? Was this their shot to get out of this series and now they're in trouble? Is that how this has swung?
I think there's a chance. I think there's a real chance. As much as they were on the road, you had them on the ropes. You could have finished this series. And I thought the Pacers, despite the fact they were up at the end of the first quarter, they just didn't feel like they were playing with a ton of energy and a ton of life. It felt like they were just, they were kind of up because the Bucks were not playing well. And then as that we got into the second and then ultimately into the third quarters, they were playing fantastic. The Bucks were, and the Pacers just didn't have any real like life or bounce to their game. They were very flat throughout the course of the game, and that took it away. And Bobby Portis didn't get ejected, played well. Patrick Beverley played out of his mind. Malik Beasley had a huge game. It was really, really
four
good.
Six so, from three.
Yeah, here's the tricky part. If Giannis and Dame play, are they going to be themselves? Giannis hasn't played in basically a month now, or more maybe. If not, it's really close to that. Dame, who knows? I think there is a level of worry because of what these injuries are with both guys. You always worry, especially with Dame, because his is a direct Achilles injury. in Giannis is a injury that can be related to the Achilles. If anything goes really wrong, you're talking about they're out all of next season, because of where this would be happening at the beginning of May. That's generally a 1 year return for that. So that's where it gets kind of hard, right? For these two guys, you got to feel really good that they can get through it. And I would assume with the Bucks, it's going to be, we put them through every element of testing and they're ready to go. And it'll probably be a, if you feel anything, or we even look like you're off a little bit, you're coming out, because it's just not worth it for us to push through to try to win a first round series.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at what happened with Bobby Portis, Chris Middleton too, both of them stepped up big time, 29 points each to keep the Bucks alive.
And Chris Middleton was great in the last game. He made all those big shots and they just couldn't pull out the win. So
part of this, I think, is, you know, we talk about the Pacers being a younger team, why they aren't mentioned as a big threat in the East, despite their offense being, you know, really good over the course of the season. It's stuff like this where this was like a young team mistake. And I'm not saying that they, you know, the Bucks played great and you tip your cap to them, they were fantastic. But this is a young team mistake to not get out there and put away a team that's missing their top two guys, as you say, kind of turn in a flat performance. I think veteran teams that understand the playoffs, that have been there, that have felt the intensity, that have experienced it, that have experienced the pain of getting bounced in the playoffs, they don't come out flat. They come out with killer instinct and they put their opponent away and they move on. And the Pacers not doing that, I think, is a reflection of how young the team is, and that's not unique to them. This is how it goes sometimes. This is why OKC's whole rallying cry of we're not too young, and you know, they're saying that everybody's dismissing them because they're such a young team. Well, it's because young teams do stuff like this, where you kind of no-show for a game, and then, you know, next thing you know, you're the one sitting at home. So we'll see if this does come back to bite the Pacers, or if they're able to bounce back here in Game 6.
Yeah, here's where I'm at with this series, kind of independent of Giannis and Dame. Pacers either win in 6 or the Bucks win. Like, I don't think they're going to win a Game 7 on the road in Milwaukee. I think whoever plays for the Bucks at that point, they'll get enough of a lift. They've clearly got some guys who could still get it done at a pretty high level. So if you're the Pacers, you missed your chance, but they still got to beat you 3 times in a row. The best way to make sure that doesn't happen, don't even go to a Game 7. Get it done now. Finish it off, because Game 7's weird stuff happens all the time in Game 7s. It's just you don't want to be there if you don't need to be. One other thing, just as we kind of wrap on these two series, did you see the game times for tomorrow for these?
No. Oh, Pacers, is tomorrow the early one?
Yeah, Pacers-Bucks is at 6:30 Eastern tomorrow. It's only 2 Eastern Conference series going tomorrow. So they are at 6:30 Eastern, Pacers-Bucks in Indiana. And then in Philadelphia, 9 o'clock Eastern for Sixers-Knicks. So it's a lot of people are, why is it 9 o'clock? It's so late. Well, it's because that's the better of the two games. They know even a 9 o'clock tip, you'll watch. The other thing is, just for anybody wondering, hey, if you want to be in the finals, guess when the finals tip? 9 o'clock or even a little. It's usually like 9:15. By the time they actually tip off. So just be prepared and be ready. But yeah, weird timing. Second weird timed game for Bucks Pacers, because they had that 5:30 Friday game. And now here we are at 6:30 tip off tomorrow. But you know, just so everybody's aware, now you know, and you know, plan accordingly if you want to tune in for it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
That's right. That's right. All right. Let's move on. Let's get to
Magic Cavs. Really good game, too. That was a second best game of the night behind Philly Knicks. Mm-hmm. Cavs took it. Cavs did what they needed to do. Orlando just played really well. You know, really tough spot on the road against a pretty good team. Cavs, though, were without Jared Allen, and maybe Cleveland found a little something with Evan Mobley with shooters and spacers around him and lots of driving lanes and all kinds of room. But Evan Mobley in this game down the stretch showed this is what he can be as the lone defender on the court. We know he's a good defender, but he showed if it gets to a place where Cleveland needs to, hey, we got to rebuild a little bit and reshuffle pieces, we can move forward with Evan Mobley as the backbone of our defense. He switched on Paolo Banchero multiple times, or better phrase, he refused to be screened off of Paolo Banchero, made his life tough. And then after Franz Wagner beat him on a play for a pretty tough contested layup, Mobley blocked the last one that would have tied the game,
game saver.
Incredible block. Like just, yeah, he was great down the stretch. He had some really nice finishes too. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see if Cleveland, who very rarely goes to the single big lineup, they almost always will put like George Niang in there, and it's a three-man rotation between him, Mobley, and Allen. Did they find something that works? Marcus Morris, like, welcome back to, you know, basketball in 2024, like knocking down big shots. Him and Tristan Thompson playing fourth quarter minutes for the
Cavs. It's like 2018 all over again.
Right? It's exactly what I said. I said it's like the 2018 Celtics-Cavs series where those two guys are out there on the floor banging bodies and doing stuff. But Orlando's coming back home. You've got a chance. I think this goes seven. I think the Magic will win back at home in Orlando, and I think they're going to send it to a game seven, and that'll be awesome. That'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Paolo Banchero was great in that one. But fun series. You know, this is kind of the series that's getting overlooked, I feel like.
Yeah.
But it's actually been pretty fun. There's been a lot of stuff going. I'll tell you what, every time I watch the Magic, I gain more and more appreciation for Jalen Suggs and the way that he flies all over the court defensively.
Really
again, I know I'm just head over heels in love at this point, but in a very Knicks-y kind of way, that he's all over the place, just hustling, diving on the court, doing whatever he can. So it's a fun series to watch, and it's one that I agree. I think it might end up being a seven game series, which would be a blast. It would be a lot of, because game sevens are always just fun.
Always, yeah. And I think what we've seen with the Magic too, even if they lose game six or they lose in a game seven, now we have a much better feel for certain. This team needs another guard. They need one more guy who can make life easier for Banchero and Wagner. And even Suggs too. Jalen Suggs, he's very good, but he's a little miscast as your primary kind of guard there. And I think what we'll see is, which is kind of scary, if you take some of the creation stuff off his plate as the primary ball handler in the backcourt, his defense will be even better next year, which is pretty scary because he's not having to invest as much energy into the offensive end. So I'm very, very curious to see who do they pursue. There's going to be some guys available. Who do they go after? May make a run at, you know, on the point guard market or point guard trade market. Like they should honestly be a team that's picking up the phone and calling Atlanta to talk about DeJounte Murray or maybe Trae Young. That one I'm a little less certain on, but maybe. The only reason why I'm less certain, I just don't want to take the ball too much out of Banchero and Wagner's hands.
Sure.
And Trae is, as much as it seems like he should be a really good off-ball player because of the shooting ability, he just isn't. Like he finds a spot 30 feet from the basket and just stands there. Like he doesn't move. You would have to really introduce designed movement and sets for him, which that's not how often how NBA teams operate. It's more concepts and higher level type stuff. So, but there's other options and that's all for later, but that's what has crystallized for me with this Magic team.
Yeah. I think on the plus side, Suggs would be an interesting pairing with Trae Young as somebody who can maybe make up a little bit on the defensive side, but you're right. Yep. How much do you want the ball out of the other guy's hands? That's got to be a concern for Orlando, but they are the landing spot for most of the point guards that are out there on the market. They're gonna get somebody. We've talked Malik Monk, could be D'Angelo Russell, could be a number of guys that they could go after, and I think it would move them forward significantly if they can pick somebody like that up. All right, let's go here. The word came out yesterday that playing with Bronny, this was via Rich Paul, is no longer a priority for LeBron. I think there's an understanding that, like, Bronny's, like, could he get drafted this year? Yeah. Would it be on his own merit? No, probably not. Probably the best bet is for him to go back to school. And if not, the decision, if they decide, hey, we're going to stay in the draft, it's going to be more about where can I develop the most rather than I need to play with my dad and all that. I still think that's going to be a draw. I still think that's something they're going to want to accomplish. But we did hear a few months ago, LeBron kind of stepped things back and said, well, you know, if I just share the floor with him, if he's on the other team, like that would be an accomplishment too. And I don't blame him for wanting to play with his son. That'd be incredible.
That's awesome.
But but I think there's a realization that for Bronny, it's about what can he do to develop to get to the next level. And that might not be a path that puts him on the same team as his dad.
Yeah, I think LeBron, too, is being very understanding of, let's say he forced the Lakers into using the 17th pick. And I'm saying that because I am assuming the Pelicans let the Lakers keep their pick this year and they take next year. So everything is pointing towards that. And we've talked about why. If LeBron forced the Lakers to use that pick on Bronny, that comes with an expectation of whether it's probably next year, but ideally by year two, he's ready to play and play real minutes and be an actual productive rotation player. That's more pressure than I think he wants to put on his kid because I think he knows that's probably not where this is at. Now, if the Lakers were to use the 55th pick in the second round on him, fine. Whatever. That's like, the chances of the 55th pick becoming, oh my God, the guy two picks later was incredible. Well, then you kind of raise your hands and say, oh, well, we missed. Like it's so rare that a guy that you're talking about drafting a two-way player anyway at that point. So that's fine if that's the direction you go. I'm with you. I'd like to see him return to school, pick a spot where he can go, be a primary guy, not like primary, like he's going to take 25 shots a night or anything, but just a primary contributor to a really good team and let him have a normal summer in training and all that stuff and find out what he is. And then we could kind of in effect do all of this again next year, but with a kid, we at least have a little bit better of a feel on what he is as a player. So I am kind of excited about watching what happens if that's the direction, much more so than just some team feels strong-armed. But I think this was LeBron also saying, we don't need to do this. Like, right, LeBron and Rich Paul basically saying, hey, if anything, it's Rich Paul saying, I have two clients I'm trying to take care of here. One, they happen to be father and son, but, like, they're not tied together to the detriment of either one. Like, let's be smart about this and let's go. And that's a good change of mindset.
Yeah. Let's be honest. What helps LeBron the most with the 17th draft pick is no one in this draft. It's trade the pick, right? That's what he's going to be looking to do. And look, I think you hit the nail on that. If it's the 55th pick, fine, go for it. I don't care. Like 55th pick, do it. There's a bunch of players that will be drafted around that point anyway that will decline the opportunity to be drafted because they'd rather go to team X, Y, or Z because they think that's going to be their best path rather than hearing their name called at the end of night two of the NBA draft, which remember two nights this year. So if you want to use that pick, cool. No worries. Or whatever. If you have to buy a second rounder and get up to the 50th pick or 40th, you know, whatever it is, fine. I don't see them using the 17th pick. I don't think that makes sense for either party. So I think this is along the lines of what should be happening in terms of what's getting out there right now. And then we'll just have to see how things fall on draft night. I think ultimately he should go back to school. If he doesn't, it's because he wants to get into a pro training program, not step onto a court right away.
Yeah, because the other thing is with NIL, he can make a whole lot of money. Probably, my guess is probably pretty dang close to what he'd make in the NBA on a rookie contract, especially on a two-way contract. I mean, he's just whoever he is. Even if it is, hey, can we get your dad to do a commercial with you for something? Yeah. Like, then it's even better, right? Like then he'll make even more money. So he could do well for himself off the court also. And the reality is, as much as I'm sure, much like any parent, LeBron would like his soon-to-be 20-year-old who's leaving the nest to be in a financially secure position of his own, I think he's probably going to be okay anyway. I don't think he's leaving for financial reasons. I'm making a joke about his situation, but we know a lot of kids are, hey, I got to go pro because I got to help my family. That's true. That should not be any form of consideration for him. It should just be, is this what I want to do? Hey, am I ready to be a professional basketball player right now? And it is important he gets it right because we see kids all the time. You come out too early and it doesn't work. Sometimes that second chance doesn't come at the NBA. It may be better to just stay. I've talked to a lot of people about this. Bryce, our guy who's been contributing to the Basketball Bulletin with a ton of draft stuff, has talked to people about this. Nobody feels like he's more than a, hey, there's a great pedigree there. He is a pretty good athlete. Maybe something pops at the end of the second round. More than that, you're doing it for other reasons that you're hopeful on. Beyond that, maybe next year might play himself into the back half of the first round. I think any idea of him being a lottery pick, though, that's probably sailed. But who knows? Maybe he comes back with a much better year because scouts do talk about pretty good defender, has a pretty high basketball IQ, not a bad playmaker. He's on a very weird USC team with Isaiah Collier sucking up a lot of the oxygen there and touches and everything else. So you put him in a little bit better of a position, he may look like a very, very different prospect.
True. All right, let's move on. Let's talk. Mike Conley wins teammate of the year. Not necessarily a surprise. I'll tell you what, Keith, there have been times over the last couple of years when we've kind of been waiting for Mike Conley to drop off. And his efficiency is high enough. The calming presence that he creates out there on the floor, it's enough to where he is staying productive in the NBA. I think we started talking about it, two, 3 years ago? That, okay, this is probably going to be one of the last good years for Mike Conley. And here he is, still getting it done, and then winning teammate of the year. Good on him.
Yeah, and there was a point, if we go all the way back, where the big question was, will Mike Conley ever shoot it well enough? And he was okay his rookie year. By year two, he came back. And I remember the stories then with Memphis of shot hundreds of jumpers. And one of the first things he did, which then we got to see during the dark pandemic periods of covering horse, he built a gym on his property, built his own gym so that he could work on his shot all the time. Mike Conley he really, beyond any of the other stuff, made himself into a really, really good basketball player. And it got to the point with the Wolves this year, whenever he sat, things got really wonky. Whether it was sat out games because they spot him rest days now, or just came off the court, where it was, we said it leading up to the trade deadline, they got to go get a backup point guard. They ultimately did. They got Monte Morris and they moved forward with that. But it was a spot with Conley where so important to that team. And that's why he got the extension he got, because they realized, hey, even if we are super duper expensive, this is not a guy we can let walk. We got to keep him here with us. And that's been really cool to watch too. Like, just been really awesome to watch him really kind of, you know, become this over the years, and how important he is to what's been a really fun Wolves team. I cannot wait for that Minnesota-Denver series. Oh, like, yeah. I think it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be fantastic. I can't wait to see how that plays out. I think it's going to be an absolute battle. It's going to be an absolute battle between those two teams. This is not trying to be sour grapes or anything like that. I thought Denver was very beatable in the series against the Lakers. I don't look at that. If they play the way they did against the Lakers against the Wolves, it wouldn't shock me if the Wolves actually go past, considering how well I think the Wolves look better than the Nuggets did in round one. Obviously, the Wolves swept, so there's part of it, and styles make fights, and we'll see how this matchup works out. But I think Denver is, given that they're in the West, they are by no means a guaranteed to make it to the finals. Are they still the favorite? Yeah, and they should be, but I don't think the Wolves' chances here of beating them is zero. And I think it's, to me, I think it's closer to 60-40 in favor of the Nuggets right now.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. And I would not have been there as recently as 2-3 weeks ago. I would have been, it's Denver. Denver will get them. But Anthony Edwards' ascension into this absolute monster of a player and a late-game killer is going to be incredible. Like, he is just so special. I also felt like, really thinking of it in the context, which is kind of rare in the playoffs, where you get to see two teams play a series against each other, like almost back to back. I know the Nuggets went to the finals, but they played the Lakers and played the Lakers again in back to back years in very close order. I'm with you. I felt like the Nuggets looked a lot more beatable, and their depth just isn't the same this year as it was last year. Especially in the front court, I think they really miss Jeff Green. I think not having him puts a lot on Aaron Gordon to be the backup five. And I know they went to that at times last year, especially when it was like, I'm cutting it down to three players here or whatever. All right, with like three guys off my bench, I'm only going with eight or seven, whatever Mike Conley did, which every coach does. It really did feel like just enough different where it was. I don't know. They just feel a little bit more beatable and not as inevitable until you get to the final 2 minutes of a close game.
Yes.
That's where they do what they do, and they take care of it. So, yeah.
And that was Mike Malone. His play calling and stuff has been absolutely fantastic. By the way, did you see I saw this. I think it was John Krasinski from The Athletic, not The Office, said that they're trying to figure out, the Wolves are trying to figure out, how do they handle Chris Finch's situation? Had surgery on his knee. They're trying to, like, I guess what they're deciding between is there some way for him, can they set something up so he can be there on the sideline? Or another option is for him to be like in one of the suites watching the game and then like texting some stuff now and then, or maybe just going down and visiting the team pregame and at halftime and postgame.
Yeah,
that's going to be this is not a situation. I can't recall anything like this happening before with a coach where physically it's going to be difficult for the coach to be there on the sideline. How can you keep him involved? So I'm fascinated. I hope he can be as involved as he possibly can be, but I'm fascinated to see how they're going to try to adapt to this situation too.
Yeah. I was talking about this on a radio spot the other day, and they said, well, in football games, every once in a while, you get the head coach has to coach from the booth, right? For whatever reason. A lot of times it's generally been some form of injury that puts them up in the booth. But the difference is you have like 30 to 40 seconds in between plays in football, where it is a play call is coming in, and whether the head coach is even calling the plays or not, right? That's usually an offensive coordinator who is often also up in a booth. Or the head coach is, if nothing else, it is, I want to run it here. I don't want to throw it, or I want to you know, throw a slant, not an out, or whatever it may be, right? It's you get that. But yeah, with Chris Finch, it's going to be really, this is a new thing. Like, I don't remember this. And it sounds like there's a couple things, right? One is, can he be in a spot where he can be comfortable enough to do it? Mm-hmm. Is there a spot where it's also, there's a safety component, right? Like, oh, if he's courtside and he can't get out of the way, you know, does he risk getting hurt again or hurting the knee worse than it's already hurt? You know, what does that look like? So I'm going to be very curious. I hope they can find a way for him to be on the bench. And then the one who is up and yelling, it'll likely be Mike Inori, who is like his top assistant. Let him kind of do the back and forth pacing on the sideline, calling out plays, yelling at guys if need be. But I hope they can find a way to get Chris Finch on the bench, because like he's earned it and the team's earned it. That, like, you don't want to see it be a weird, goofy situation where, you know, just something doesn't happen the way it should because of this weird oddball injury.
Whatever it is, they'll make it known ahead of time so there's no surprises. Sure. They're not going to want any awkwardness where the players aren't sure which coach to go to or who's really you know, they that will all be spelled out very clearly before the game. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how they handle the situation, and not something that we tend to see in the NBA.
It does give us a chance for a fun moment of, that's Chris Finch's music. He's coming to the sideline, right? Or something like
that. He's not supposed to be back for 3 months.
There he is. Chris Finch is here.
By God. Speaking of returning from injuries early, Zach LaVine ahead of schedule to return. Now, what that means exactly, we'll see. I still don't know who knows what Chicago is going to do with their situation. Probably what they shouldn't do is what they'll do. But Zach LaVine right now ahead of schedule. And that's great. You always want to see players get healthy. I don't think this suddenly makes a trade market for him materialize this summer, but I think it's good news that he's ahead of schedule. Hopefully he can be ready to go to start the season. And then, you know, he's a talented player when he's out there, and then we'll see what's what for the Bulls. They've got a big summer here, and then we'll see what happens with them when they get into the season.
Yeah, this came out of a piece from Casey Johnson. He's covered the Bulls forever, does a great job. He works for NBC Chicago now. He came out and basically said he's like doing his offseason like player. I don't know what he's calling him, but it's like kind of this is what might happen with each guy this summer. And he notes in there the Bulls' preference and LaVine's preference is still trade. Like that seems to be where everybody wants to be, but everybody understands that may be something that's a delayed thing. There may be teams that say, I need to see him on the court first or whatever it is. He also noted he had what was called a non-union Jones fracture. I don't know exactly what that means. I know a Jones fracture is the bad one in the foot because that's the one where like blood doesn't get to that bone and stuff. But what they actually did was they removed the piece of the bone versus just letting it heal, which is apparently why he's on this accelerated timeline. I don't know what that means for long-term. Does that mean there's more susceptibility to injury or whatever it is? But sounds like Zach LaVine is probably going to be ready to go at the start of next season, which would be pretty big for him if anybody trades him, or big for the Bulls if it's, hey, we just got to get him on the floor for a month or two worth of games as trade season opens up. Then teams can feel pretty good about saying, all right, let's go invest in getting Zach LaVine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll see how all that plays out. What do the Bulls look like next year? They're going to be one of the teams to keep an eye on, certainly, this summer.
I hope it's not what you said. And it's the same exact team, because I know way too many Bulls fans are going to be like, I don't even know what to do with that. Like, you know.
Yeah. And hopefully they can get Lonzo back and, you know, all that. But
whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifydhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh boy! All right.
It was like the most depressing. That was more depressing than yesterday's open after the Lakers season ended.
What are they gonna? I'm still like, what did you do at the trade? You had opportunities to move guys. Teams were calling you about Andre Drummond on an expiring contract, that and you didn't really cash in. Like what? Yeah, that made no sense. That made no sense. All right,
moving on.
Kawhi. Out for tonight. Jaime Jaquez also out. Jaquez has been fantastic as a rookie. He's been a rotation piece, which a rookie to come in, especially a mid first round pick like Jaquez to come in and be a consistent, productive player the way he has for Miami. That's been impressive. Both guys though out tonight. The Clippers have shown they can definitely survive without Kawhi. So. I don't like before the series. We said, hey, if there's no Kawhi, the Mavs probably take this easy. That narrative is definitely flipped on its head, and now who knows what's gonna happen in this one.
Yeah, it helps. Luka is clearly limited, but Terrence Mann has done a wonderful job defending him, played really well. If at the end of the day, if you're the Clippers, you still have James Harden, you still have Paul George. Zubac has played really well. You've got Norm Powell, you still have a ton of talent on that team. You should still be in these games. We'll see. The Hawkeyes won. This part is not the fun part because this part sucks that he's out. Yeah. You never want to see a guy's season probably end that way. I kind of doubt we're going to see him again because I think Boston has learned their lesson and will close this out and do what they need to do to get it over with. But I what's super fun is this was the guy who everybody was like, he's the most heat guy in the draft. They'll probably draft him and it'll probably work out great. And then it did. It's always exactly fun when that happens. It's there was that made sense. So I'm super bullish on him moving forward and we'll see what that looks like with them. But and then just with the Celtics fully confirmed now, we talked it late yesterday. We got the news as we were wrapping up recording, I believe. Kristaps Porzingis also out, has a right calf strain, a soleus strain. That's the kind of the worst of the two muscles as far as reading everything. Same thing Giannis has been going through. So we're not going to see him again in this series. I have doubts we see him in the second round. And then from there, who knows, right? That depends on what the team does and where he's at. But Adam Himmelsbach of the Boston Globe came out and said, team is very confident this is not season ending, that it is. And part of the reason they're not even putting a real timeline on it is they just don't know. It sounds like they hadn't fully seen what it was like. So fingers crossed, hopeful everything ends up better there than what it looks like. And at least it wasn't an Achilles. That's, that part is good to know for now.
All right. We'll finish up with this. The Pistons are interested in Dennis Lindsay and Tim Connolly. Potentially as coming into that new role that we heard all about just what was that a week ago that they're going to have at their above Troy Weaver. So that'll be interesting to see what this ultimately looks like, but these are some people that they're interested in. And this Pistons team, they've got to figure some stuff out this summer and kind of get themselves back on track. I know they were looking to take a step forward this season. They once again didn't. And now I think there's going to be some fairly significant changes coming ahead to this team. I still think they're going to be in a rebuild. I don't think that's changing, but they're going to have a new voice here in terms of plotting their path.
Yeah, and Mark Stein, who had this nugget, noted that it is whoever is hired will make a decision on Troy Weaver's future at that point. Clearly, that won't be just them unilaterally. The ownership will be involved, I'm sure, with that. And Troy Weaver may make it known, like, hey, I don't really, like, I had a chance to run the show here. Now you're bringing in somebody else. That creates an awkward, weird spot. Dennis Lindsay, if people kind of like, I know that name, but why do I know it? Worked for the Spurs forever, ran the Jazz for a while. Now he's working for the Mavs as a consultant. And then Tim Connelly, building the Wolves up into what they are now after being a big part of building the Nuggets into what they have become. A lot of people want to be like, well, why is he even mentioned? He isn't out after this season. And there is some rumors of if that ownership thing looks like it's going to go super sideways or it's going to be start waving and cutting guys, Conley may say, all right, I'm out of here. I'll go somewhere else where I get a little bit more carte blanche to run things the way I want to. So, but we're going to see with that. Hopefully the Wolf stuff calm settles and he stays right there and keeps building them up, but we'll find out.
Yeah. A lot going on there, obviously, in Minnesota on the front office side of things. All right. I think we're through everything. I'm only partially melted at this point. So that's a success. I'm not turned into a puddle just yet. I'm sure that's coming though. So we will wrap things up there. Yeah, that's right. We'll wrap things up there, but appreciate all of you for joining us. Make sure you do subscribe to the Front Office Show on YouTube. Don't forget to check out the Basketball Bulletin as well, which is our Substack. I'm working on something for that right now. So go check that out, basketballbulletin.substack.com. And we'll be back tomorrow breaking down all the latest around the NBA. Till then, everybody, see ya and stay safe.